Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, March 23rd, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. The big debate this week on Capitol Hill, at least in the Senate, revolves around the SAVE Act, or the Save America Act. This is a piece of voting legislation. It would include all sorts of new rules and restrictions on how you vote and how you register to vote. The big sticking point is that this law, if passed, would require people to present proof of citizenship when registering to vote. That could be a passport. That could be a birth certificate. There are a few other things that would qualify. So today we're going to talk about what's in this legislation. We're going to talk about why it's become a huge sort of point of gridlock on Capitol Hill. And we're going to ask you this question. Should Americans have to prove citizenship in order to register to vote? We would love to hear your perspective this hour. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing your thoughts, because a lot of people are okay with ID being presented, but this is a heightened step of proof of citizenship. So love to get your thoughts. 888-477-9499 to email us, studio2@whyy.org.
MJ already in the comments asks, why not just a driver's license or a real ID? We'll talk about that. We've got two experts with us this hour, so we'll answer your questions about this bill. And we'll also get into, look, there's a lot of politics,
a lot of politics behind this.
We'll get into those politics as well.
All right. We have our trio of local news stories, and I'm kicking us off today. Philadelphia International Airport is on the list of airports that could see deployment of ICE agents by the federal government. The New York Times broke this story over the weekend, reporting that 14 airports, including New York, Newark, Atlanta, Chicago, New Orleans, and of course, Philly, could see a flux of ICE personnel. According to a document obtained by the Times, the agents are expected to do tasks that would ultimately free up TSA workers so that they can focus on processing travelers as security checkpoints have been shut down at airports across the country due to this partial federal government shutdown. TSA agents missed their first full paycheck recently, and hundreds have quit, and thousands have called out in order to take on additional jobs to make ends meet as this partial shutdown continues into its sixth week. We're at almost 44 days at this point. Mm-hmm. And so President Donald Trump had threatened to send ICE agents to airports unless congressional Democrats agreed to fund the Department of Homeland Security. And ICE agents have reportedly been spotted in Atlanta. So far, no word of them being in Philadelphia. But it hasn't been as bad in Philly as far as long lines as some of the other airports. But time is ticking, and we'll see things change.
And even with that, you get conflicting reports. This checkpoint was bad. This one is good. If you're using the regular line, the not regular line, the special line, whatever. So it's there's a lot of confusion around exactly how bad it is right now at PHL, at least on my part. Maybe other people have clarity. Yeah, and it's hard to imagine this would make a huge difference. Theoretically, right, you could take some things off of TSA's plate and it could go a little bit smoother. The big problem is obviously that the agents are not being paid, the TSA.
Yeah.
Agents are not being paid and people are quitting or they're calling out sick. And this just happened.
Yeah.
So you just, how many times can this group of workers go through this type of whiplash and remain committed to the job?
Yeah. And that's real. I mean, and by the way, ICE agents are getting paid through the Big Beautiful Bill. So they're around. So I guess the president's like, might as well put them
to work.
Unclear
if they have any training to do any of this work or whether they'll do anything.
A lot of questions around that. And of course, this is political. And we're hearing comments from local leaders, of course, not really wanting to have ICE in their cities.
At the airports, for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of politics, story number two. One of the big macro stories in Pennsylvania politics over the last decade is the huge drop in the gap between registered Democrats in the Commonwealth and registered Republicans. Dems used to have this humongous edge in registration. Now they're barely holding on to their lead. But, and this is the development, for the first time in a while, there is some good news for state Democratic leaders. According to the Inquirer, For the last 5 months, Democrats have actually registered more new voters in Pennsylvania than their Republican counterparts. And over the last decade, this has barely happened. The only time that Dems out-registered Republicans in Pennsylvania since around 2016 was near the 2018 midterms, which was kind of a blue wave election. So, you know, a lot of questions about what all of this means. Is it a sign that Republicans are in trouble in 2026? Is it a sign that those big GOP voter gains are finally stalling out? We're hitting a new plateau? Or is it just a 5 month blip and Democrats are so desperate to celebrate anything in terms of registration that they are celebrating this? So I guess time will tell, Cherry, but do you have some initial thoughts on what this all means?
Yeah, well, I feel like there's a lot of things going on right now, you know, because according to the Inquirer, the Pennsylvania Democratic Party leaders, they had deprioritized registration and focused on turnout. So you had that. Then you have Republicans turning and focusing on turnout. And then you also had people going and leaving the both parties and becoming independents.
Yeah.
So there was just this shuffle. And I guess Democrats sort of woke up and said, hey, you know, maybe we need to put a little bit more attention on registering people and not losing everybody to either the GOP or the independents, even though independents can't even participate in the primaries. We're seeing that number go up every year over the past 10 years.
Registration is so interesting because when we're not holding an election, we don't have polls and we don't have results. It's the kind of the only number we have. So everyone kind of seizes on it. And we are trying to determine whether it means anything. But of course, over the last decade, Pennsylvania, as it was the decade prior, remains a swing state.
Yeah.
Actually, Democrats have actually done pretty well in statewide elections at the state level, right? Mm-hmm. And national, it's been a mixed bag. So it's sort of, it's always the question with registration, is it a leading indicator or a lagging indicator? The lagging indicator argument in Pennsylvania would be that basically there were a bunch of people, mostly in Western Pennsylvania, Southwestern Pennsylvania, who were essentially already Republicans.
But they had registered
Democrats. They just hadn't
switched. Yeah.
And so with the Trump wave, they decided to switch. The leading indicator argument is that there maybe was sort of something going on with Republican messaging that was working better in Pennsylvania than Democratic messaging, and that maybe that has started to flip. But I'm always a little skeptical because you always seize on the data you have. You know, you always focus on the numbers you have because it's something.
But don't you think, I mean, they used to have 900,000 plus advantage, voter registration advantage over the Democrats. I mean, over the Republicans.
Right.
The Democrats had a 900 plus. Now it was less than 200,000. I would have been sounding alarms way before now. But
and a lot of people were alarmed. But is it not funny, though, to you that through that whole time, as that entire lead evaporated, when it comes to election results, not all that much changed. It remained a tightly contested swing state.
And very purple. Yeah.
So I don't know.
We're going to be watching, though. A lot of things to be watching.
Speaking of watching, things you watch. Okay, story number three.
Yeah, story number three. A 1970s Philadelphia soul group is the inspiration for dance moves by boy bands like New Edition, Velvet Devo, NSYNC, and Backstreet Boys. Probably didn't know that. Yes, the New York Times did a cool write-up on Brooke Payne, the longtime choreographer for New Edition. The group was just in Philly on tour with Boyz II Men and Toni Braxton. Well, back in the 80s, he built on moves of groups like the Temptations and Motown groups like the Jackson 5 to create a new style of dance. But he says his biggest inspiration was Blue Magic.
Blue Magic?
Yeah, Blue Magic. It was a soul group built right here in Philadelphia, big in the 1970s, and he used their mathematically musical and dense dance steps to build New Edition's style.
And then New Edition influenced in
everybody,
and Backstreet Boys and BTS. So it's crazy that it kind of comes back to Philly.
Always comes.
It always
back
comes
to
back
Philly.
To Philly.
And by the way, a signature move he took from Blue Magic is a deep bow at the end of each part of the chorus in the song If It Isn't Love by New Edition. By the way, Payne is featured in this, and I have a quick clip so you could take a look. Listen to this. That's Blue Magic.
Blue Magic. Great name. Oh, and there's New Edition.
There's New Edition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely similar.
And
that's fascinating.
And if you look at the two, what New Edition is a speed of like a faster version. You hit.
They sped it up.
They sped it up.
So I looked up. So I looked into Blue Magic because I'd never heard of them.
Yes.
And I had no idea they were this influential when it comes to choreography. So the core of the group started out in North Philly. They were friends in North Philly, and they literally sang on street corners around 16th and Girard.
Love it.
So think about that. If you were on that street corner passing by in the early 1970s, you were like watching the future of music, and you were seeing the lineage of something that would develop into like BTS.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to think about.
It's crazy to think about. And I mean, like you said, but it all comes back to Philadelphia.
Yeah. And I love tracing like the lineage of culture, the domino effect of culture. Like this group that frankly, probably a lot of people don't know today, Blue Magic. Ooh, we're hearing them right now. Like the fact that they did a little something in their act that became the seed that sprouted into this whole style of dance. I love it.
And the fact that K-poppers are doing this.
Yeah.
Shout out to Blue Magic.
From popping and locking to K-popping.
There you go. And we're going to be talking about the same act on the other side of this break.
Yeah.
But
no way to transition really there.
No.
We're just going to say that's the topic. And we'll see you on the other side of this break. Enjoy a little Blue Magic on Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. This week on Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans are pushing to pass the Safeguard Americans Voter Eligibility Act, also known as the SAVE Act. The legislation includes a key provision that requires proof of citizenship with a passport or birth certificate to register to vote in federal elections.
And that's not all. The SAVE Act would limit mail-in voting, require a photo ID to vote, and mandate states turn over voting rolls to the Department of Homeland Security.
President Donald Trump says the SAVE Act is his top priority, arguing it will, quote, guarantee the midterms for his party. Republicans also argue the reforms are necessary to prevent non-citizens from voting.
Democrats are united in opposition. They point out that non-citizen voting is already illegal and extremely rare. And Democrats believe the bill would effectively disenfranchise millions of eligible voters across party lines.
Add it all up and you've got what looks like a legislative stalemate. So what does all this mean for voting access? Could the SAVE Act actually bring Congress to a standstill? And what are the political ramifications for this in November and beyond?
Yeah, and we'll get answers from a pair of political reporters who have joined us today. We have Jonathan Tamari, senior Washington reporter for Bloomberg Government and author of the free Bloomberg newsletter that launches today called Washington Edition. Jonathan, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we also have Sahil Kapoor, senior national reporter for NBC. Sahil, welcome back to Studio 2.
It's great to be back.
And our question of the day for you, our listeners on the road, at home, and elsewhere is this: should Americans have to prove citizenship in order to register to vote? Give us your thoughts by calling 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the chat.
Speaking of Facebook, Justine says the SAVE Act and similar legislation is just another way for them, I think she means the GOP, to try to oppress women and poor people. So, Sahil, I want to start with you. What really, at its core, distinguishes this piece of legislation from past attempts and other attempts to reform voter access or to reform sort of the electoral system writ large?
Well, the main thing is that there are more elements in it. You know, this is a piece of legislation with ideas that Republicans have been talking about for a long time, including voter ID. That debate goes back at least a decade and a half. I can think of to the Obama era when I first started covering Capitol Hill. In addition to that, they've added a proof of citizenship requirement to register. This is fairly restrictive. You need a passport or a birth certificate. This is one of the things that Democrats and outside critics are focusing their opposition on. They note that many Americans don't have passports. They don't have easy access to a birth certificate. And these requirements would simply create barriers for American citizens to be able to vote. In addition, you have these DHS provisions that are getting more and more attention. that DHS would essentially be able to screen voter rolls that states have and flag suspected non-citizens for disqualification. Trump's critics, including Democrats in Congress, believe there's some nefarious stuff that can happen there, particularly as the president keeps claiming that the 2020 election was stolen from him falsely and talks about massive voter fraud, accuses Democrats of trying to rig and steal elections, which there's no basis for. So you can imagine why the president's critics are not inclined to give him these kinds of powers. And lastly, there's always the element of Republicans traditionally have opposed the idea of major federal intervention or intrusion into elections. They believe, or at least they've said they believe, it should be run by states. That was the basis for them opposing the For the People Act and the Freedom to Vote Act that Democrats tried to do, the sweeping voting rights bill back in the Biden era. And they've kind of abandoned that. And they now believe that there is a major role for the federal government to play to impose voting laws in all 50 states. But look, bottom line, guys, this is not going to pass. This needs 60 votes in the Senate. It does not have 60 votes in the Senate. It does not have a path to clear the filibuster, including through this talking filibuster idea that's been proposed. Republicans don't have the votes for that. And they certainly don't have the votes to nuke the filibuster. So this bill is going nowhere.
Yeah. And so, Jonathan, I want to bring you into the conversation because the president has been 10 toes down on this. He sort of doubled down and said that he will not sign anything else unless and until the SAVE Act is on his desk. Why has he been so adamant about this bill?
Well, this goes to something that the president has talked about even before he was president, even going back to his first term. He believes, or says he believes, that voter fraud is widespread and a scourge in the country. Now, as Sahil mentioned, there's no evidence of that. There's been numerous studies by independent organizations, media, by people in Trump's own Justice Department during his first term that found that their fraud is infinitesimal and certainly not enough to swing a national election. But the president does believe that it's a problem. He believes that Democrats cheat. He believes specifically that big Democratic cities in swing states, including Philadelphia, including Atlanta, have a massive voter fraud problem. And he's sent people, again, in his first term and in this term, to try to find that. They have not been able to turn anything up to this point that shows anything substantial, which kind of confirms the other studies that show it's not. But he believes in it, and he says that they need to pass this to stop any cheating that would make Republicans lose the House, possibly lose the Senate this November. He is worried that we've seen the first year of his term, he's basically had unfettered power within Washington because Congress has gone along with everything he's done, the Republican-controlled Congress. He's concerned that if Democrats win the House and or the Senate, they will be able to put checks on his power and investigate him and his administration. He wants to stop that. So these are kind of two fundamental beliefs and motivators for Trump coming together in one bill. And so he wants this done no matter what.
Yeah. Joanne says, the quote from the president saying this legislation would guarantee the midterms tells me all I need to know. The real driving force behind the SAVE Act is voter suppression. A couple other comments here I wanted to sort of read in sort of tandem. Erica says there's going to be a disproportionate impact on women because the driver's license won't match the birth certificate for women who change their name upon marriage, and real ID alone isn't sufficient. Matt says, I hear the claim that women will be disenfranchised because their married name does not match their birth certificate identification. Tell me how my wife got a passport facing the same issue, but for voting, this is going to be different. So there's a lot of confusion here, Sahil, about, I know you're saying it's not going to pass, but this is a chance to actually look at what this could mean. And there are states, by the way, I think New Hampshire among them, where you do have to show some sort of proof of citizenship to register. So can you help us sort through the claims about what this would do if it were enacted for, say, women voters whose current name doesn't match their birth certificate?
Yes. Yeah, so this has been one of the most common criticisms we've heard from Democrats in the Senate on the floor when they're making the case against this piece of legislation that there's a large number of women who get married, they change their names, and they would need to basically show the paper trail of all of that. Some women, for instance, if they've gotten divorced and remarried, then there's a longer paper trail to show because some of the IDs are not going to match what their name is now. So That's been described, that's been characterized as an onerous burden that could end up disenfranchising women. Now, of course, it's not that it isn't doable. Yes, if you're trying to get a passport, and you're trying to fly internationally, you have to show that paper trail and get the passport. The argument here is that, flying internationally is not a constitutional right. Voting is, and there shouldn't be that additional burden here for voting. Now, Senator Lee, the author, the Senate author of the SAVE Act, has pointed out that there are provisions in the bill that allow states to make accommodations in this situation. This is the criticism that Republicans are sensitive to because this would be a problem for many in their own base as well. Mike Lee has pointed out that there are provisions in the bill that would allow states to make accommodations, such as allowing women to sign affidavits saying that, this was my name before, this is what it is now, this is why things don't match. So it's not necessarily the case that if women are unable to provide the proper documentation, they wouldn't be able to, but it does create a hurdle. Now, the other point I want to address is the argument that Senator Lee and President Trump and a bunch of proponents of the SAVE Act have made here, that if it doesn't pass, Republicans won't win another election. Guys, the rules would be what they were in November 2024 when Republicans won the House, they won the Senate, and they won the White House. That's an absurd argument on its face.
I wanted to ask you a quick follow-up, Sahil, because Robin says, didn't Pennsylvania residents just have to provide proof of legal residency to get real ID? That was a hassle for those of us who had a name change due to marriage, not to mention the hours-long lines to actually get the real ID. Will we have to do that again? And Sahil, I was in Philadelphia when we had a voter ID law that passed in 2012, and people had to scramble. They were trying to pay money to get copies of birth certificates so they could get IDs and all sorts of things. What have you heard about folks saying, look, this could actually be expensive, to individuals who don't have proper documentation, time consuming. And is there any idea about how many people could possibly be disenfranchised?
These are all among the arguments that are being made against this bill and for why it shouldn't pass. Firstly, real ID, if it doesn't convey proof of citizenship, is not enough to register to vote in this bill. That's one piece of criticism that has been leveled. There's an argument that, Republicans are focusing on, that just the idea of showing some basic ID to vote is not a controversial thing. If you poll it, it's about 80-20 in favor. Even 76% of Black voters in a Pew Research poll done last August say having to show photo ID to vote is perfectly fine. But again, the way this bill is written has invited a lot more criticism because it does not create these off ramps and these alternate paths for those who don't have documentation ready.
June comments, I am a poll worker in Lower Bucks County. If legislators knew how the identification process works, they know that voter fraud is quite difficult. If you registered to vote when you got your real ID license, you had to prove your identity and citizenship, passport, birth certificate at the same time. These data are then used by county voter registration boards to prove validity. The SAVE Act is a sham. Going back to the politics here, Jonathan, Sahil notes that there are aspects of this that if you just pulled them out and made them their own piece of legislation, you actually might have a conversation about getting to 60 votes in the Senate. The question I have is whether the president, Mike Lee, the hardliners on this particular issue, have any interest in doing that, or whether they actually want this to result in some sort of stalemate because they see that as a potential political advantage in November. What's your sense of that, Jonathan?
I mean, I think if you gave them the power to make a deal, if there were eight Democrats on the table who are willing to vote for this in some form, that they would go ahead and do that. But I think they know that that's not a realistic possibility right now. And so given the fact that there is a stalemate, given the fact that they're not really going to be able to pass this bill, this isn't like some other bills where just I think some small tweaks would actually bring some of the other party on board, that they are kind of content to have a contrast and to say, well, look, we're going to put Democrats on the record as voting against voter ID. I think there's also some concern that you see quietly that this is something that Mike Lee is using personally to boost his own profile, especially online. He's had a very online focused campaign around this and has been a champion of this. And I think a lot of other Republicans realize it's not necessarily going anywhere. I think a lot of them would prefer to be doing things around the cost of living and affordability, which polls show are the number one concern going into this election. but they're kind of spending a significant period of time here on this voter ID fight that, yes, in a vacuum, people support, but I don't think polls suggest that it's the thing people are walking around every day thinking about
Right.
or worrying about in their everyday lives.
Yeah, and by the way, our question of the day is, should Americans have to prove citizenship in order to register to vote? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, you can keep those comments coming in the chat. We have a couple callers online. Danita from New Jersey has some thoughts. Danita, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just had a question about the voting, a proof of citizenship. I don't think they should. I think your driver's license is good enough. That should be proof. I think they're only doing this just to suppress people from voting, and it's women and minorities. That's who's really going to be affected, as well as the elderly and people that live in rural counties. So now I think the driver's license should be good enough.
Thank you,
yeah.
Danita.
Thank you, Danita from New Jersey. On the line.
Can we like actually interrogate that claim a little bit, because you hear that a lot, right? That this would really affect voters of color, it would affect women, that these are big parts of the Democratic coalition. However, Sahil, we have seen a trend in recent years that low propensity, lower information voters, the type of people who you suspect might not want to go through extra hurdles to register, or might not have a photo ID handy on election day, that these voters are increasingly vital to the Republican coalition, especially in higher turnout elections. Are you convinced that if this were to pass, Sahil, it would actually hurt Democrats more than Republicans?
I'm not convinced, Avi, and I'm glad you brought this up, because this to me is one of the absurdities of the politics of this situation. It almost feels like we're taking a time machine back to, 15 years ago, back in the Obama era, because at that point, it absolutely was true. The Democratic coalition relied overwhelmingly on working class voters, on low propensity voters. This was back when Hispanic voters, for instance, voted Democrat by a huge margin. And it would be precisely those types of voters that experts say are likeliest to be disenfranchised by this, overwhelmingly supported Democrats. However, that is not true anymore. We've
so
seen
are
working
Democrats
class voters
really taking
of
a
all back.
Are Democrats really taking a principled stand here? Because if it is true that these rules might actually help them, and they're the ones that are thwarting them, political parties don't often act against their own self-interest in this way. Are you saying that you think Democrats might be, or perhaps Democrats just have a different read on the situation, Sahil?
I think both parties are singing from an old song sheet, and they have not caught up to how their own coalitions have changed. I think Democrats, if you ask them, are still convinced it would harm them more. I am not convinced it would. Look, if you look at studies of, the states with the lowest rates of passport ownership, almost all of them are red states.
Yeah.
If you think about, people who would have to, who would have the longest drives or at least likely to have, a federal, a government office or whatever down the street to get a passport or to recover their birth certificate if they don't have it. They're living in rural areas and they have to, take much longer drives. They're overwhelmingly Republican voters. So the amazing irony of this is that if this bill were to pass, there is a decent chance, I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but there is a decent chance it would disenfranchise Republican voters more than it would disenfranchise Democratic voters. And by the way, last point, guys, to what Jonathan was just discussing, I spoke to Senator John Fetterman, the Pennsylvania Democrat, and he told me he would support a simple voter ID bill, that he's open to that part of it, but he's not going to support the Save America Act because there are too many onerous requirements, including on mail-in voting. So he's the type of person who would be gettable if Republicans were interested in compromising on this one, but they're not.
Yeah. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Jonathan? I saw you sort of nodding along. Yeah.
Yeah. Just also to build on kind of the perspectives from the Senate and the idea that this bill could hurt Republicans. One of the Republicans who's raised concerns about it is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. And she was telling a few of us last week that when you look at her state, it's a vast state. There's not great roads throughout all of it. That they have a small number of voting centers that people would have to travel to in order to get, in order to register and prove their citizenship. And she was really worried that voters in her state could be disenfranchised just because of the amount of time and energy that would go into something like voting. So she's an example of a Republican who's worried that her own voters would be hurt by this bill.
Yeah, let's bring in another caller who has a question. Brian from Avondale is on the line. Brian, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I've done a lot of reading and watched videos on this and research. The one thing I haven't been able to find out is if this would pass, I know it's not very likely, but would current people that are registered have to re-register and reprove their citizenship, or is it just simply to show up with certain IDs?
Yeah, let's pose that question. Thank you, Brian from Avondale.
Great question.
Sahil, can I put that question to you? I mean, what percentage of folks would have to re-register if the SAVE Act became law?
So my read of this legislation is that the voter ID component, the requirement that you have to show an ID to vote, would go into effect immediately. I don't know that everyone who is registered would immediately have to re-register by the time of this current this next election, in part because if that were the case, and for instance, let's just pose a hypothetical world where the SAVE Act passed and became law 2 or 3 months before the next election, that would be absolute chaos.
Yeah,
there's no way that could be implemented. So I think there are open questions about when the proof of how the proof of citizenship requirement would work, depending on the timing of passage. But I do believe the voter ID requirement would be going into effect immediately.
Yeah. And I want to read this comment from Phyllis, who says, I've worked in voter registration in Pennsylvania for decades. The SAVE Act guarantees widespread confusion in every county voter services office in every state. About 10,000 such offices, as officials attempt to meet the burdensome immediate new requirements. This scrambling would provide a legal basis for Trump and friends to declare as invalid any election results they dislike. And so I wanted to sort of talk about the confusion factor a little bit with you, Jonathan, because that has been a big red flag. A lot of folks have felt that this administration may be trying to sow some confusion, some distrust. What are you hearing from lawmakers around this issue? Because there's this eroding distrust in the electoral system generally.
Yeah, this is something Democrats have been talking about pretty much since Trump took office this term. And they look back on what he did at the end of his first term when he was pressuring election officials all around the country to find him votes or trying to stop the count in places where the vote count was going against him. And they raise serious questions, some of Democrats, about whether this election this fall can be trusted and will be and whether the actual results will be honored. And when we saw, you know, the FBI launch a raid on Fulton County, Georgia, to take their election data, there's significant, those concerns are rising. And so this is part of a much wider pattern of where Democrats are concerned that Trump is going to try to do something to overturn the election results if they turn out in a way that he doesn't like this fall. So that's yet another reason, I think, why they're so dug in on this. The idea that voter rolls would go to the federal government. I think there's a fear that Trump is looking for any pretense, any piece of information he can use to raise doubts about the election, and that that's what those voter rolls would end up being used for.
Yeah.
And just to go backtrack a little bit, my best understanding of how the bill is written right now, and again, it has not been implemented and probably won't be implemented, but if you are registered to vote, you would not need to automatically re-register. However, if you move, however, if you change your name, you might be subject to this proof of citizenship process. But again, when a bill is written and how it's enacted and then how it's interpreted by the courts, like there would be a lot of things to sort out. So it's a great question and a lot of folks had it. And thank you for asking on Studio 2. We're about to hit a break. Keep your calls and comments coming. Studio 2 at WHYY.org. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. We're asking you this hour, do you think Americans should have to prove citizenship in order to register to vote? We'd love to hear from you. This is Studio 2 on WHYY. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
Welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're talking about the SAVE Act, the Republican election reform bill that would require proof of citizenship to register to vote and photo IDs at the polls. President Trump has said this legislation is one of his top priorities and has promised not to sign any other bills until it passes.
But Republicans need a handful of Democrats in the Senate to sign on, and so far no one is raising their hand. And later on, we're also going to talk a little bit about the battle over TSA and DHS funding. By the way, that's still happening in Washington. But first, let me reintroduce our guest. Jonathan Tamari is a senior Washington reporter for Bloomberg Government and author of the free Bloomberg newsletter launching today called Washington Edition. We also have Sahil Kapoor, senior national reporter for NBC.
Yes, and our question of the day for you, our listeners, is this. Should Americans have to prove citizenship in order to register to vote? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comments in the chat. How about we bring in a caller who's been on the line? We have Ray from Boothwin on the line. Ray, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. First, a comment on your guest. They were arguing a little bit about whether the SAVE Act was going to help the Democrats or help the Republicans. In my mind, that's not the purpose of laws. They're not supposed to be written to help one political party or one group over the other. And if you look at the SAVE Act, it looks like it's going to help or disenfranchise women more than it would men. So right on its face, the law seems to be segregating against women, and it looks like a large number of women because of the maiden name issue. My second point is, if the Republicans really wanted to pass this law, wouldn't you think that they would propose that, okay, we're gonna make sure that everyone's a citizen. We're going to help people get passports if you don't have one. We'll pay for the passport. We'll make it easy to get the passport so that you can now show the passport when you vote, and that, no question, that's it.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like it's a disingenuous act that they're trying to pass in the first place.
Thank you so much. That's Ray from Boothwin. Jonathan, would love to get your take on that, but also sort of piggybacking on what Ray had to say. You know, the Republicans are sort of doing these full arguments for days about this bill, to sort of, I guess, nail people down on their positions. But you know, just your thoughts on how they're planning to use these positions. So your response to Ray, but also that question as well.
Yeah, I think he makes a good point about the approach Republicans are taking. Again, voter ID is an issue that is popular, and there might be some version of a voter ID law that could win 60 votes. But they're not positioning this bill in that way. And the thing that one of the things that tells you that is that they're also trying to add these other extraneous culture war issues onto it. The president wants to add onto it, a ban on transgender women playing women's sports. He wants to add limitations on transgender care to this. That those things have nothing to do with voting, but they are things that he thinks fires up his base and puts Democrats in a bad position if they vote against it. So those are the types of things that tell you that, yes, Republicans are now treating this more as a messaging effort than an effort to make actual policy, even though I think at their core, many of them do believe in the policy of voter ID. They're not seeing this as a bill to kind of get an actual outcome. And so that's where I think some of the politics are. And yeah, I think they basically want to pile all these things into a bill that Republicans believe work in their favor, put Democrats on record as voting against them, and then use that against them in the midterm elections.
And what about this threat, Sahil, that, Trump won't sign anything until this gets done, and that it could bring all of Congress to a screeching halt? I mean, is that a real threat? Do you foresee that possibly happening, or do you think it's a negotiation tactic? What's your read on that sort of like piece of leverage in this whole equation?
It's a negotiation tactic in the view of President Trump, obviously, because the White House backed off of that claim very quickly when they were asked, are you actually going to hold up a DHS bill if Congress passes it? And the White House was quick to say, absolutely not. Of course, the president would sign that. So this sounds like something that the president put out there as a way to try to pressure not just Democrats, but also to pressure Republicans to try to use every tactic available to them to try to push for the SAVE Act. This is one of those cases where I take the president seriously, but not literally. Seriously, yeah. In the sense that he's trying to convey he's mad and that he wants more to be done. He wants, he's not happy with the way Republicans are handling the SAVE Act. He thinks there's more they can do. He wants them to nuke the filibuster, as he's repeatedly called on them to do, and they aren't doing that. So I think it's just more the president venting than anything else. If he gets a bill, if Congress passes a bill and sends it to his desk that he likes and supports, I can't see him refusing to sign it because the SAVE Act isn't law.
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller. We have Kirk from Allentown on the line. Kirk, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I just want to make a statement and a possible question here. I do want to say that this SAVE Act is not disingenuous. It's a very, very good thing because, truly, we're here, and President Trump and his cabinet did this for the sole purpose that Biden brought in 25 to 30 million illegals and that were not vetted. I mean, so, and look what happened in the 2020 election. I mean, there's fraud all over the place. So don't you think truly, regardless of what everybody on your panel thinks, there are people that are in this country that are real American citizens that want a real election? I mean, this is what it's for. I mean, so this is a drastic thing to cut back fraud in elections. And it's
and what's your question, Kirk?
And what's your, Yeah, go ahead. And
the question is, why is it that you're making it sound like it's the Republicans' fault because the Save America Act for voting?
So it's not a question. Okay, thanks,
on the
Kirk.
Board.
Okay. Thank you, Kirk.
And
I just want to be clear. There's no, there has been no evidence of widespread fraud in elections. I just want to underscore that. And I want to get your reaction to what Kirk said. And you know, maybe if there are reasons why Republicans say this bill needs to pass, you know, Sahil, what are those reasons?
Well, so firstly, Kirk is correct about the fact that there were a lot of people who entered the country illegally in the Biden years. That is true. That has been true for the last several presidencies as well. It was true in the first Trump presidency. It was true in the previous presidencies before that. That has been a recurring problem that this country has had, as many, many countries have in terms of securing their border. There is no evidence that they are voting. There's no evidence that they're trying to vote in any meaningful numbers. The studies that, that have been done on this matter find numbers like 7, 8, 9, 10 instances of attempted illegal voting out of billions of votes cast, not nearly enough to swing even a minor election that has been decided narrowly. So I think it's useful to distinguish those things. Yes, illegal immigration is a problem that many Americans feel and want new policies to address, but it is not a problem that has shown up in voting. Now, again, if you ask most voters, they will say it's perfectly reasonable to have to show some kind of ID to vote. Mm-hmm. But to the question of how it's done, if this were floated as a compromise, one interesting compromise I'd heard floated from an expert is require ID to vote, but make a passport card free for everyone to get. Have the government fund it. Make it free. That would be one way to offer this compromise and to say, yes, make everyone show an ID, but make it easy for them to get.
Let me bring in another caller. This is Holly from Bardo, Pennsylvania, on the line. Holly, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I think your expert just may have answered my question, but where I went in my head when I heard this is, I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question is this really a problem? What are we trying to solve for? Is this really a problem? And how, if so, how big is the problem? Because when we do, when we just look at problem-solving techniques, we say, okay, how many fraudulent votes were cast, for example? Let's say there are 100. But then the next question we ask is, out of what, right? If there are 100 fraudulent votes cast out of millions of votes, does it make sense for us to solve it? And the answer to that, if the answer to that is yes, then our question, our next question we ask ourselves is, what is a proportionate response? Meaning, like, what is the response that warrants this? And everything you've been talking about doesn't make me think that this is a proportionate response.
Right,
so I don't
that
know
call.
That I...
Thank you, Holly, for that call.
Thank you, Holly.
I guess to take the other perspective on it, I think one thing that you will hear conservative voices point out is that some of these things have been tried, and that the Democratic claims about mass disenfranchisement are simply overblown. So maybe you're only weeding out a handful of voters, but that you're also not disenfranchising a huge group of voters either in the process, and that ultimately this would be sort of a net neutral thing. I mean, Sahil, what do you make of that kind of counter argument, like that the idea that this is a disproportionate response that would have a huge effect is in essence sort of a step too far?
Yeah, the disproportionate response question, I think, is the main thing preventing Republicans from getting any real Democratic engagement on this issue. The weakest argument politically that Democrats have against this idea of you know, of what Republicans are trying to do is Democrats are dead set, most of them, against any kind of photo ID requirement. They say it is inherently disenfranchising. They say it's Jim Crow 2.0. Like I said, the country doesn't agree with them on that. Even Black voters in the polling that we found don't agree with them. They overwhelmingly think it's not unreasonable to have to show some kind of ID to vote. But the question, again, as always, in when you're making laws, is how you do it. The other element of this is that not only does it fail to disenfranchise people when voter ID has been attempted, it sometimes backfires. You know, there have been instances where voter ID laws were imposed, and opponents of those laws simply use it to try to galvanize those communities that are supposedly going to be affected by it. And they point out that these people are trying to prevent you from voting. That can be a very effective tool to kind of counterbalance any attempt to do that. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And we wanted to talk to you both about a couple of other issues before we wrap up the show. And one of the issues is, you know, there's a Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, his candidacy for head of the Department of Homeland Security was advanced by the Senate over the weekend. I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, sort of, you know, what stands out most for people who may not know who Senator Mullen is, give a little bit about his background and sort of the politics of his advancement in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting character. He's a guy, he's a senator from Oklahoma. He's for a long time been someone who's been seen as kind of a liaison between Republicans on Capitol Hill and the White House. He's had a very good relationship with the White House. He's kind of carved out that niche for himself. He used to fight and do MMA fights. If you see him around the Hill, he's always got this rubber bouncy ball that he's bouncing as he talks and walks.
He squeezes it too when he's talking on mic. I've seen him do that. Yeah,
he does. So he's someone who's seen as a liaison. He's also someone who can be at times a little bit combustible. He's had some pretty intense confrontations in hearings, and in fact, with Senator Rand Paul within his own party, there's clear disdain between the two of them over some of the things that Mullen said about Paul, which for a moment caused some problems for his nomination. There's not a lot that he says that indicates he's going to change policy significantly from the way that Homeland Security operated under Kristi Noem. But I think he's maybe going to be just like a different face on what the administration is trying to do. I think Noem, through a number of her missteps in public, became somewhat of a toxic figure for the administration. And I think there's just maybe a hope that a new face will reset things. But the challenge is it's not clear that many of the policies are going to be very different. But he's a senator. He gets a certain amount of deference from fellow senators. Even some Democrats say they like him personally. And so he should be confirmed later today, most likely.
Yeah. And as we get ready to end the hour, Sahil, you just wrote about funding for DHS and funding for TSA agents. It sounds like compromise is not exactly right on the horizon here. What's the latest on funding for the folks who, you know, work at our airports?
Yeah, so the latest is we are about 38 days now into this government shutdown for DHS. The situation at airports is getting worse and worse. Anyone who's tried to fly recently has probably encountered longer lines. What has happened in the last few days is that there's been an off-ramp floated. A number of Senate Republicans like this idea that basically the Congress would reopen all of DHS with the exception of ICE. That is the main point of dispute that Democrats are demanding changes on in order to win their votes, and save funding ICE for a separate bill. This party line, so-called reconciliation bill, where Republicans can cut out Democrats and do this themselves. This is an idea that would have some benefits for Republicans, because that wouldn't then have to give in to Democratic demands, you know, to require officers to remove their masks, to require judicial warrants to conduct raids and so forth. And for Democrats, it has the benefit of keeping their fingerprints off of funding ICE, which they don't want to fund right now. It's become a toxic idea among their base, at least to fund that without restrictions. And polls show that a majority of the country has turned against President Trump on his handling of immigration, so they feel comfortable there. The problem with all of this is that Trump rejected that idea when it was proposed to him over the weekend. He spoke to Senator John Thune, we are told by two sources. White House aides have conveyed this idea to them. Some Republican senators have said this is a way out of this logjam and that the pressure is growing too intense. But Trump has rejected that off-ramp, and he says Republicans now should make no deal at all with Democrats on DHS funding until Democrats pass the SAVE Act, which is never going to happen. So arguably, we're in a worse position now than when this began.
Well, it's always good to end on a hopeful note. Thanks, Sahil Kapoor, senior national reporter for NBC. We always appreciate your time on Studio 2.
Thank you.
And we always appreciate Jonathan Tamari, senior Washington reporter for Bloomberg Government. And he's got this free Bloomberg newsletter launching today called Washington Edition. Best of luck with that, Jonathan. And thank you, as always, for joining us on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for the plug.
Yes. And we got to say thank you to our callers today. And from New Jersey, we have Tom and Connor from Philadelphia. Sorry we couldn't get to you, but hopefully you'll listen again and call in again. And of course, we couldn't do any of what we do without our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calliquet engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. We'll talk to you tomorrow.